Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, sports media. Welcome back to the cookout. Let's go. Calm down. The calling number is 929-477-2759. Y'all just called into the Sports City Chef's cookout on a Thursday night. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. I'm feeling some type of way, continuing on from what stormed in on Monday, late in the free-for-all. I got somebody rolling with me for the evening, calling out of the Peach State of Georgia. Nas is in the building. Nas, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Hey, you might have to switch that comment song to the version of the Clips, the re-up gang version. Banger. I heard that, and now I can't hear the comment version no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always think of that one when I hear the beat. But dope intro. Timeless. What's good, man?
I'm not mad. Believe me. I listen, if I can talk to you after the show, right, and I can show you how close I am to not only the Clips, but I'm close to Pusha. Like, my homie that I grew up with, he's from Connecticut, where I am, but he lives in Virginia. And him and Pusha are really close, to the point that if you like that song, the song that I can refer you to, you'll be out of your skin to know how close I am to Pusha. But that's neither here nor there. But I love the fact that we are in the building and got a lot of stuff to jump into for the evening. And by the way, this is one of the people that encouraged me to get into the kitchen late night here on a Thursday. So I had to come up with some interesting stuff. I'm going to put him to the test and see what's going on. Now, first and foremost, we do have a caller, but I'm going to get to the caller. Caller, stay there shortly, because I want to kind of set this thing off first, and then I'll dive into you. I'll dive into the caller after we get into this. So, it's like we left off Monday night on a free-for-all about the Rooney situation. And the encouragement of trying to hire a minority. I won't even just say African-American, but I know where they're kind of pointing the finger at. But there are, you know, Latinos that are in the league with Ron Rivera. That's one coach that comes to mind. He's getting hired. But your thoughts on the stance that they're trying to throw out there, because this was something that we had to deal with at the end of the show and really couldn't pick this apart as we need be. But save some meat for the plate, because I know that we got a caller in queue, and I got some stuff that I want to talk about as well on that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So whenever we talk about the Rooney Rule, I feel like the first thing that has to be stated is, remember, Johnny Cochran was going to sue the NFL for unfair hiring practices and discrimination as far as executives and coaches. Let's make it plain, like Malcolm, we're mostly talking about black people. We're also talking about Latinos. We're talking about women, talking about Asian people, all people who are not represented in those NFL positions. So when that lawsuit was coming down the pipe, the NFL had to get proactive. So the Rooney family, one of the leaders of the Rooney family, came up with the idea, and some of the other NFL people, with the idea of the Rooney Rule. And with the Rooney Rule, it said that when any job is open, a minority will have to be interviewed or considered or, you know, put up for at least one will have to be considered for the job before a hire is made for NFL head coaches and executive positions. Now, the problem became NFL ownership, for the most part, didn't really agree with this idea. This is not something that they were on board doing. This is something where their hand was forced. So you saw in practice them kind of circumvent the rule by either doing, you know, I guess you could say superficial interviews or interviews to get it out of the way and then hire the person who they originally wanted to hire, which had disproportionately has been a white person who is either connected in a family way to another NFL person or staffer or, you know, front office member, or because that's the new white hot name on the street. You know what I mean? So it's like the Sean McVay syndrome. Sean McVay gets hot as a coach of the Los Angeles Rams. All of a sudden, any coach that ever had a cup of coffee with him started getting interviews and jobs. And again, skipping over the black candidates who had made their bones as positional coaches, and for the most part, former players as well, because that's the other sticking point there. It's really hard for a minority to get a job in the NFL if they didn't play the game. So we're talking about, like, you have to have some type of NFL experience and the coaching experience to even be considered. And as we look through the NFL ranks, through front offices, you see we are underrepresented for these jobs. So the NFL has struggled with this for a long time because commissioner after commissioner, they can't force the ownership's hand about what they think about the world and who they think is capable and qualified of holding these jobs. So, you know, we're still in the holding pattern 15 years later about trying to figure out how you can get a better, more proportionate and accurate view of the NFL when you're not talking about on the field, when it comes to the jobs that just require people to be good at their job, the thinking jobs. The bias in the ownership is showing in the people that they hire. So I think that's a good way to start it off, to give people an idea about what the Rooney Rule is and this iteration of the Rooney Rule that's up for proposal, and we're seeing where this is going to go.
Okay, I'm going to spill into this after I get the caller in queue. Caller in queue, what's your name and what's on your mind tonight?
You know what, fellas, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys on a Thursday evening, calling incognito tonight. Got my wife's phone and I got some stuff to deal with, but I definitely wanted to jump in where I fit in and definitely shed some light and kind of get some perspective on the situation.
Okay, well, since you are the resident Steeler guy here, and knowing that the Rooney family are big in the state of Pennsylvania, your thoughts on what's going on, and I do got to, you know, give a little gratitude, or not a lot, a lot of gratitude to Brian for sending us on our way with a little dessert to walk away from the free-for-all and spilling this right to the kitchen. I'm cooking with it, and I want to see what's on you guys' heart, and I definitely can hear where Nas is coming from, and I can't wait to dive into this. But your thoughts on how they're trying to push the agenda at this point in time in 2020?
You know, I want to start off by saying a couple of things. You know, first and foremost, you know, again, shout out to E. Hughes for kind of sprinkling this on at the end of the show on Monday. It's given me something to talk about, being as though I had to prepare my thoughts for this evening's show. Second, I am 36-year-old African-American male. I also married a Caucasian woman. I have an interracial child. So what I'm about to talk about, honestly, you know, kind of hits me personally on so many different levels, because I now have to speak to my child about what we're currently dealing with, okay? Here's the thing. You know, we understand what the Rooney Rule was intended to be. It wasn't intended to be a blanket. It wasn't intended to be a checkbox situation. It was, in turn, intended to give minority candidates, and as we've gotten, you know, much more advanced in our thinking and our way of doing things, female candidates an opportunity at a job, okay? What is going on, and again, we all sit here, understand what's going on, it has become, unfortunately, a mockery. It has become something that these GMs and these owners check a box to say that they have spoken to, you know, a minority candidate. One thing we need to understand is that when these jobs are available, keep in mind there are only 32 of them in the league, and at any given time, anywhere from 1 to 6 maybe are available. So it is really a dog-eat-dog situation. You really got to get yourself in there and kind of make, you know, your presence felt. One of the things that we understand, again, my man Nas mentioned this as he kicked off his thoughts this evening, was the who you know aspect of what's going on. A lot of times when these particular jobs are being handed out, it's not so much what you know, it's who. You know, it doesn't matter what your accolades are, whether you be a collegiate coach, whether you be a former player trying to get into coaching, whether you be a coordinator trying to come up, it's who. Keep in mind, Sean McVay was the hottest guy going right now. And like my man said, if you broke bread with this brother, you was getting a head coaching job just because of who you know. So as much as I want to sit here and, you know, uplift the African-American or the minority candidate for not getting for trying to get a job, I actually have to ask us a question. And this may come as very controversial based off the nature of this conversation. What are we doing to give ourselves a leg up? You know what I'm saying? Keep in mind, you were breaking bread with Sean McVay. You know what I'm saying? You were in at the mixer with Jerry Jones. You were doing this, that, and the third. But do we see minority candidates doing what they need to do to give themselves a leg up? You know what I'm saying? When I was a kid, you know what I'm saying, my father always taught me, Aaron, if you're hungry, go where the food's at. You know what I'm saying? Don't go to JCPenney. Don't go to a department store. There's no food for you there. My brothers and sisters and minority candidates, if you want to eat, sometimes we have to do the unthinkable, do what has not been done to set ourselves apart, to get to at least say, huh, I wonder what person could do. I'm not saying that there's not a problem in the hiring process. I'm not saying that there's a problem with how things are being done. But instead of sitting there beating the drum talking about woe is us, why aren't we getting these looks? Why aren't we doing – why aren't we getting these jobs? How about we put ourselves in a position to where – I don't want to say the white man, but I'm going to keep it 100 – where the white owner or the white GM has no choice but to look at us. Because clearly the resume means nothing. Clearly what you've done on the field or what you've done in meeting rooms as a coordinator means nothing. So we have to think outside the box. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where I want to start. Again, I'll listen to what everybody else got to say, but my thing is this. Like, yes, we have an issue. All of us sitting here understand what the Rooney Rule is or what it's meant to be. It's not being practiced that way. So we have to play ball to get to where we ultimately want to go.
Okay. And I'll fill in the blanks. You can respond, and I'll go after.
Well, I mean, it's a good question, and it's probably the question that comes up the most when this discussion is had. The first thing would be the Fritz Pollard Alliance. This is a group who has dedicated themselves to what? Getting black coaches opportunities. So they have a training program. They have a process for getting people ready for interviews. They have a process of getting people a staff together if they were to get the position, and they've been working with the NFL for years trying to get these things done. So the pressure from them is what actually is making Goodell and some of these other people push these things forward. And remember, not all of the owners think in the way that we're describing. There are a few who are on board with this and think this is a good idea and think this is what needs to be done. But there are more of them who don't think in those terms. And this is not a thing of not enough black people being qualified or not enough black people going to the mixers or the coaching seminars in the off season, which they do in high proportion, usually spending their own money to fly out and stay in a hotel or whatever to go to the little clinics and all of this. Like, all of that work is being done. Every box is checked on that front. And that's why they actually have a case when you start talking about, okay, we're seeing a huge discrepancy in this hiring process. Think about what women are. Women are 51% of the population. And we look around at the NFL, you see, you know, hardly any women throughout any staff. That lets you know that this is a systemic process. It's not a thing of women not being qualified. It's not a thing of black men or Asian men or anybody else not being qualified. It's a thing of the decision makers having bias. And ultimately, like, when it really comes down to it, people are as capable as what they're used to and what they see as capable in their mind. So that part is already handled. The onus is on the people who are actually doing the hiring and firing. Because here's the other part. This is illegal. You see, like, it's illegal to discriminate against groups and continue to hire only from one set. So, like, the good old boy club stuff. When you look through NFL front offices, the thing you'll see a lot that stands out is old last names from coaches in the past. You'll see Shanahan this or, you know, whatever other name you'll see. You'll see these things be passed down. You'll see favor for a favor type situations. And you'll continually see what? Every year on Black Monday, you'll see extreme turnover. Meaning, if their process was good, we wouldn't see as many coaches get fired year after year after year and start the same process over again. Now, if they had a situation where hiring was stable and they were making these hires and everybody in the organization believed in these coaches and it looks like a good job, then it would be less of a case. But the fact that you see that extreme turnover and you see no change in how they go about hiring lets you know what we're dealing with. The onus is not actually on the people who are searching for a job. The onus is on the people who are making the decisions, because they continually make these bad decisions based on, you know, like, we're keeping it 100 on the show based on what someone looks like, what their background is, because, like, this is hard for some people to kind of, you know, deal with, but there are people who think other groups are not as capable as the group they come from, and that's just something that has to be confronted. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but it's still a good question.
Okay. Now, this is something that, you know, now I just hit on at least one of the families. And just looking at, you know, coaching situations or hires throughout the NFL and how they considerably give, you know, people of next generation an opportunity before others that have paid their dues along the way. And it's like, you know, Siri just hit on what are we doing to try to get ahead? Well, just looking at one of the guys that has waited a while to try to get his opportunity is Eric Bieniemy, the running back coach with now the Kansas City Chiefs. And good thing that he was able to help be a part of the staff that won a Super Bowl, but even heard Andy Reid at the end of the Super Bowl saying that this guy deserves his shot. He's actually, I don't even want to say it this way if I'm saying it the wrong way, but he's actually available to part ways with this guy because he knows the capability of this guy. And this isn't the only place that they've said this about Eric Bieniemy. This is just one place that they've said this about. Now, not only did Nas hit on Shanahan, we also have Belichick's son that has a job in the league. We also have the Grudens who have got multiple opportunities, let alone Jay Gruden did nothing in Washington, D.C., and I forget, it was an NFL player from back in the 70s that was playing, and he was with the Houston Oilers. I didn't know that the Gruden's father was one of the coaches with the Oilers back in the 70s. So it was like, okay, so that's where their run came, and knowing that John was a part of the, you know, the West Coast office or a part of the staff, if you will, with Walsh and stuff. So knowing how all these guys funnel throughout the league. But it's like, this is where these guys get their opportunities. Now, who to say – let's say, for instance, Tony Dungy doesn't have a son that's available to get a job, or Dennis Green has some offspring that had an opportunity to get a job. Like, these guys have been head coaches, at least been to a championship game or better, or a Super Bowl, or Lovie Smith, if that's to be considered. Just to throw some of these names out there for people, but I'm not saying that these are guys, I'm just speaking in general, because that's what they tend to look at. They look at the royalty, if you will, of people that have been here from yesterday. So I don't think this is fair, because this is the way that society's pushed. You know, a lot of people like to stick to the mantra of, you know, if a guy is this, you know, similar in qualities, but they won't give the person the job because of, you know, ethnicity. And now this is being pushed to the forefront in football, let alone this is a sport. And this is something that Brian hit on. I like the numbers. He was like, where it's like 85 to 90% African-American, they're not able to go out there and be presentable or be able to function and hold down a team. I think that's horse manure, you know, and it needs to stop. This is happening everywhere, almost in every sport, and it's a turn of the times right now, 2020, where they said that there would never be a running quarterback when now the league is turning into mobile quarterback. Like, and majority of the time when you see a mobile quarterback is an African-American. So give these guys opportunities. Let these guys be able to turn over a new leaf and prove people wrong, because that's something that people live with on their shoulder, is to be able to prove somebody wrong. Who's to say that Barack Obama didn't have that in his bag to say, you know what, I am intelligent enough to run the country. You know what I'm saying? Even though he spoke, he wasn't even supposed to be put in that opportunity, and he actually said, well, you sound presentable enough, and this was back when Bush was in office. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is something that they continually look down on, and I'm speaking actually from an African-American perspective, because I don't know the full realm of minorities, whether it's, you know, Latino, whether it's Asian or Oriental, you know, just throw out a number of different ethnicities out there that can be capable to get the job done. So they have female coaches now that are out there, and one of them was an assistant or a part of the staff. I don't want to say assistant, but she was a part of the staff of the San Francisco 49ers. She was given an opportunity to at least get to this level. Who's to say one day that there won't be a female head coach? So, of course, she's going to be the one trying to forefront push to get there. Like, why can't an African-American or a Latin American do so? And this is what you're going to do? Okay, we'll sweeten the pot if you do it and give you another draft pick. You know, every owner or general manager is going to try and pull the trigger and make it happen at least for a year, see if it works out for the betterment of the team. So it's like this is the plan now to, like, what is this? I really feel like this is an opportunity to slap people in the face. So I don't know how you guys interpret what I said.
No, that was perfect, Thomas. And here's the thing. Black coaches don't want to get a job because they're black. They want to get the job because they're qualified. And
exactly.
They want to be in the talent pool like everybody else. Think about what the NFL does. Let's say you had 50 candidates for a job. And on the other hand, you could have had 100 candidates. If you pull from the talent pool of 50, you're getting a less quality coach because you're pulling from a more shallow pool. So it's illogical to even do what they're doing. So that's where we're talking about power and bias, you know, kind of intersecting and creating this chaos, because we would have a better product if they actually expanded their view and brought in more people. Like you just talked about population of women. Like, you brought in more people, you'd actually have a better product because you have more minds on it, more creative things would come about, and it would be good for the NFL as a whole. But when you grow up with certain biases, or you have certain biases in your brain, your idea of who is qualified, you have a projection in your head of who's qualified. And the person who you feel is not, you look at it as, well, I guess he's a running back coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how archaic this stuff is. There's no other industry you can find where 80% of the workforce is from certain groups or has a certain expertise and background, and then you never see the majority of that group move up to management or any moves that aren't lateral. It doesn't even make sense with numbers or logic or anything else. We're just talking about people's bias within hiring practices, and they see other groups as less than. And, you know, the numbers just bear it out.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that was just mentioned?
You know, honestly, no, not at all, man. I mean, I think, you know, between the three of us here, we kind of hit it, you know, pretty soundly. You know, I just want to make sure we add, you know, I mean, understand that, you know, these owners and these GMs have their punch list of who they want, you know, to coach their particular positions. And I do agree, you know, with what we've been talking about, where, you know, it's basically a royalty thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, who knows who's, you know, related to this, or, but at some point, you know, I just really feel that, you know, we as a culture, you know, definitely need to do more. I really do. You know, and again, I'm not these particular candidates, you know what I'm saying? I don't know exactly, you know, if they are, you know, beating the door down to try to get an opportunity or sending the right emails or going to the right next door or whatever the case may be. But I do honestly believe, and again, this may be me being naive, you know what I'm saying, but I do believe that, you know, at some point it'll flip. You know what I'm saying? Mike Tomlin can't be the only one. You know what I'm saying? Jeff Flores can't be the only one. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there are 32 teams, 32 head coaches, and there's four minority coaches, I think, if my number's correct. 4 to 5 minority coaches, you know, amongst the league. Why? I don't even, you know, why? You know what I'm saying? So something has to change. Something has to give, you know, and I'm just hopeful and praying for the day when it does.
And some of the names that come to mind that are in the front office or have been, like me being a Detroit Lion fan, it was Martin Mayhew, one of the guys that were up in the office up there in Detroit, and things didn't work out, but he actually got moved, and now he's with the San Francisco 49ers, and that actually worked out this year for them, you know what I'm saying? Or looking at the Cleveland Browns / Baltimore Ravens, they went with a former player in Ozzie Newsome, and seeing what Ozzie Newsome was able to create in that front office and able to help Baltimore get 2 Super Bowls there too as well. So, I mean, there is capability in higher, you know, positions, things of that nature, but we want to see it on the field. And I'm speaking on all minorities. I'm not just speaking on African-American, even though that is the ethnicity that I hold. And knowing that I'm experienced in being an African-American and playing in certain sports and knowing that having the same capabilities or better than others that I could go out there and produce. So if I was in a coaching aspect or had a resume to be a coach and I'm being overlooked just because of we're darker tone, like I don't get that. I don't get it. If Tony Dungy was able to help the Indianapolis Colts get to a Super Bowl and bring one home, Tony Dungy was able to go to Tampa Bay and Tampa Bay won a Super Bowl off of the back of John Gruden. That was Tony Dungy's team. Like, I don't get that. Like, all John Gruden did was just grab the reins and just say, yeah, and that team took off. Like, I don't get it. Like, you've seen it from yesterday. Hell, Lovie Smith took the Chicago Bears to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman being his quarterback, and he set up for 13 weeks straight. Rex Grossman was going to be a quarterback. Like, how are people not available to go out there and get this job? I don't get it. But it's time for y'all to put blinders on, or color blinders on, if you will. It's not to look at that. If the person is out there to represent themselves, to, you know, to look at the common goal to get the team to the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl and bringing it back to your respective town and state, they should be able to do so. But obviously, this is something
that you
want to tell.
Hold on.
I got you. I'll get out of my plate. I'll let you eat. Look, and this is the crazy part, because the NFL has been stuck on racial terms. I don't know if that's the right thing for me to say, but for at least the past, I want to say within the past 6 or 7 years leading up to the Kaepernick situation, knowing that he was speaking out or using his platform about police brutality up against minorities, it wasn't just against African Americans, and they not only turned a blind eye to him, but they shut him out of the league, and he wasn't able to get a job again, and he turned down $100 million. Like, who would really walk away from that? But he's showing that he's being a martyr. You know, trying to get people to understand that, and knowing that the NFL is trying to turn a new leaf and trying to bring awareness to the situation. So looking at that, looking at the Rooney situation, it's kind of a mix-up within the last 6 years, and I'm distasted by this situation. But, Naj, go ahead. I'll let you speak.
Yeah, I'll be quick, man. I was just going to say, think about the story Deion Sanders told. He wanted to start getting into coaching. He had done it at the youth level, and, you know, he put some feelers out to see how it would go. And the response that Deion got was he would come on to staff as a gopher, meaning go for coffee, need you to go over to pick up this film, need you to go to the airport and pick up this guy. Now, this is Deion Sanders, one of the greatest DBs to ever play. The idea that he wasn't even entertained as a DB coach should kind of give you an idea about what we're talking about. And then think about terminology. John Gruden's a coach. John Gruden's terminology for his system is based on what? His cultural references. Spider Y, two banana, yada, 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 right? How different would it be for somebody, someone like Tomlin, who has heard Ready to Die before, has seen the movie Juice before? How does his cultural references that will be built into his system differ from other people who would be dealing with what population? The group that comes from Tomlin. And think about how good of a coach Mike Tomlin is, all he's accomplished, and you got people in Pittsburgh calling for his head. I don't think Mike Tomlin's a good coach. He just won with Bill Cowher's team. Like, that is really said on radio in Pittsburgh. You can ask Sirius this. Now, the people who are close to Carolina, you would be shocked at how many people call for Derek Anderson to start over Cam Newton. Like, if there was a bad game or a particular series he struggled, you'd be amazed at how Carolina radio used to light up with people saying, Derek Anderson should be playing and Cam Newton should not. He's not good. This is what those people were saying. So this is the other side of this. It's not just ownership. We also have to talk about the rest of the population. There's a lot of disdain for players. There's a lot of jealousy of the idea of these people don't deserve to have this, that, and the third. And the disrespect that black coaches and black quarterbacks receive in this moment kind of make this climate really tough to get, you know, the reforms passed or change that we really need to get to what Sirius is talking about. That's the other difficulty here, because most of the time we don't really talk about it. But think about the Cowboys leaking out details about Dak's contract.
That's a topic. I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to cut you off like that. That's a topic for today. No, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off like that. I'm sorry. I just didn't want you to overdo it.
No, go ahead. I'll
include this in there, like the Dak contract situation, and I guess it did mean to transition quick. So. Looking, and this is interesting now that we get to put the spin to it, like now looking at the coaching aspect and looking at the Rooney Rule situation, it now puts the Thunder, and not to say, no pun intended, I'm a Thunder guy, but the Thunder of the topic here with Dak Prescott looking for a top dollar down there in Dallas. Now, I've talked to Nas specifically. I don't even know how Sirius feel about this. I'm going to actually let Sirius go first, but I'll talk to actual Cowboys fans, right? And looking at what Dak is looking for, the Cowboys had offered him five years, if I'm not mistaken, for $175. Dak wants $105 to be guaranteed in the final year to be $45 million, right? So it's like, okay, he has won a good amount of games since he's been in the league. He's been to the playoffs twice out of the 3 years he's been in the league. Can't even blame him for none of that. Like, because the second year, Zeke was going through the off-field issues and having stuff happen down in New Orleans, so on and so forth, but it was all off-field. You know what I'm saying? So they had to deal with a lot of stuff off the fly. I got to give Dak a lot of credit for what he's done, especially in this season right now. He threw for 5,000 yards passing, right? But this is the one thing that I look at with Dak is his ability to win the big game. And in the playoffs, he got one win. And then he has two losses in the playoffs as well. So I'm not going to take too much away from what Dak has accomplished, because I'm not going to lie. I am a diehard Lion fan, and I do not like the Dallas Cowboys, but I was a big-time Dak Prescott fan coming out of the SEC, and his story was heartfelt, like knowing that his father left his whole family young and his mother raised them, and then when he got to college, his mom passed away, so it was basically him and his siblings. And now just this year, his brother died around when the pandemic broke out. I don't know if his brother did die of the COVID situation, but I know he died around the time of all of this, the scare or the mayhem started happening. So I don't blame him for trying to go after getting top dollar, but the money that he's aiming for the height of the NFL. So if he's aiming for the stars, what happens when the real stars come out, like, say Patrick Mahomes, when he starts shooting, is he going to be the first $250 million quarterback in the league? And it's like, do you guys think that gets this money? Because I look at what they just did with Zeke, and all of the money that Zeke got, how do you have Zeke and Dak soak up all of the money and think that you're going to have available pieces to try and win a Super Bowl or attain a Super Bowl, however you look at it? I think this year would probably be the only year they could get it done if he signed that type of contract. So now I go from here to there, from talking about the Booney situation to talking about Dak now in a mix of emotions. But, Sirius, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the Dak situation surrounding the contract?
You know, honestly, man, I'm going to be real, real plain and real straight with you guys. I think Dak is really, really, really crazy right now. You know, I understand that, you know, you want what you feel as though you're worth. I don't think any one of us here, you know, will go into our boss's office and accept anything less than what we feel that we're worth. However, Dak has also said multiple times that he really, really wants to put together a winning formula, key pieces around him, and as well as get compensated handsomely. Man makes commercials after commercials. He's got the chunky soup thing. He's got different car deals, different stuff going off in Dallas. So he's getting money from endorsements. I honestly believe that he is not worth the $54 million a year number that just dropped today. I don't think he's worth that much. And I don't believe that Jerry Jones is going to pay that much, which means, in my honest opinion, he'll play out this year with a franchise tag, and they'll try again next year. They brought in Andy Dalton for a reason. You know, I honestly believe that, you know, I like to throw shade at Cowboys fans and Jerry Jones regularly, but I do believe that this offseason he did some smart stuff. He brought in some insurance. He drafted CeeDee Lamb. He did some stuff to kind of help his cause. I don't think Dak Prescott is going to get that money. I think he's going to play out this franchise tag, and we'll see what happens next year.
Okay, now, so we go from one extreme to the other. It seems like the seesaw, if you will. But your thoughts on Dak and his dispute right now with, I guess, him and his agent and the Dallas organization?
Well, me and Sirius agree on one thing. We both don't think Dak is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I don't think that. But the quarterback position pays a certain market value. Whether it's Kirk Cousins or Jared Goff or whoever you name, when it's your time to come up, you basically have the team over a barrel and they have to pay. So this situation today, and again, remember, we've heard details about Dak's contract over, you know, the last couple of months. Why? Because the Dallas Cowboys are leaking that out. They want the fan base to be upset at Dak for asking for money. This is a pressure play. You against the player to get the player to concede to less money. Here's the other thing. As a player, you have an obligation to push the ball forward as far as you can. For what? The next generation of players. For the next free agent. For Patrick Mahomes and everybody else that comes behind you. It's your job to push it forward as far as you can. It's not your job to do the general manager's job and say, I'm going to save you some money so you can spend at other positions. Nah, bro. Be good at your job. Draft well. Sign better free agents. You need to work with what you work with. It's not my job to balance the cap for you. GMs need to be better on that front. But overall, I think he's going to be franchised, like Sirius said, and maybe we'll see the Kirk Cousins thing where he's franchised 2 years in a row. Because I don't think Dallas sees him as a top-10 quarterback, but he is good enough to win with what they have now. Because of CeeDee Lamb added to the weapons, now you got three great wide receivers and the running back that you have. You should be explosive on offense. So Dak can walk into that offense and look better than what he actually is based on the weapons he has. That's another problem with quarterbacks. Get way too much credit for the things that are around them. So overall, I agree with Sirius in that I don't think Dak is that kind of talent, but he has earned the right to get that kind of pay. Because when the quarterback comes up for pay, the question is always, well, what's another option that you have? And when you tell me your other option is Andy Dalton, I'm just saying, okay, we playing poker. Look, you bluffing, bro. If you got a hand and you laying down an Andy Dalton card, bro, like if the Cowboys roll out Andy Dalton as a starter, they're not serious about winning the division or the Super Bowl next year. So it is what it is. Dak has them in a position. And here's the one thing that we got to add as a wild card. Jerry is known to crumble under pressure. We saw the years with Emmitt Smith where Emmitt said, I want my money. Emmitt waited two games. They lost, and Jerry broke down and wrote a check. Ezekiel Elliott, past year, he said he wanted his money, went to Mexico, and eventually Jerry broke down and wrote a check. So there's a case for Dak getting this money, even though I don't think he's that type of quarterback. The market says you pay them.
So this is very interesting where I stand at on this situation. Me, I agree with the panel. I said to the Cowboy fans and the people alike, I said that he's a mid-tier quarterback, but he's on a good team. He can get stuff done, and he's a scrambler, so that actually makes him a dual threat. And this is what I was just talking about on them saying quarterbacks that scramble don't win. He has the potential to get it done as long as he can make that big play. The one thing that hurts Dak is his downfield passing. Like, is there something about him in the deep ball? He needs that receiver to be wide open for that play to happen. And this has been coming into fruition in the big games being played, whether it was in up against Philadelphia for the division or whether it was in the playoffs and everything fell apart. But that's in Dak being young. So with him being young right now and him aiming for the stars, I think that he'll have to shoot for the stars and have to see another season like this, especially with the Wolves and the stars that he has around him right now. If he performs of a lesser value than what he did last year, then it's like the organization has a point on what they're hanging on to. And then looking at if they franchise him this year and if they don't next year, then not to say Andy Dalton is the best situation, but at least this guy has started and been to several postseason positions. So Andy's a Texas guy too, so I can't take too much away from Andy Dalton. Plus, let's be honest, Andy Dalton was in the middle of Cincinnati too. Let's be fair there too. He was in the middle of Cincinnati. So I want to be that fair, but I don't want to totally butcher him. I don't want to try to give him too much credit. But if they
butchering
can't meet some
timeless
type of time,
he deserves it.
Okay, well, we'll see. For me, I don't think so. I think that if he does, right, he gets it. Him and Zeke have all that money in the backfield, that whole front line. They're going to start to lose pieces. That defense that still needs help right now will lose pieces. Like, I don't even know if they'll hang on to, like, Smith and Van Der Esch and them guys, because they're going to be looking for money, too. There will be nobody of star value on both sides of the ball with these two soaking up majority of the money at the end of the day for at least the next 3 or 4 years here, you know? So this is where it helped Brady, because Brady was able to be humble with whatever he was getting, and they were able to win because they kept the entire unit around New England. It's hard for people to follow that blueprint because he was with Giselle. He wasn't starved for money, but he was all right. You know what I'm saying? But other people are looking to get their Latrell Sprewell all and feed their family. And this may end up costing them in the long run. So I get where you're coming from, Nas, that this is the market that these quarterbacks fall in. But I'm looking at the whole team as a general, how this offensive line was quoted as being one of the top three, the best offensive line that they had. They will start to lose these guys moving forward. And that's what I'm looking into, is how many pieces they can keep in Dallas if these guys end up soaking up majority of the cap. So
How much is the GM being paid? Is the GM a volunteer? As far as I know, that person draws a check.
Well, Jerry Jones is the GM, so there ain't nothing happening. Like, everything goes through Jerry.
They need to get at that job, man. That's all I'm saying. Like, we fall into this Tom Brady thing where we say, well, Tom Brady took a loss so the team could get better. How about if we keep it at a buck? Bill would have cut the Tom Brady experiment short if Tom Brady was getting market value every year. Like, I know we call Bill Darth Vader and everything else, but Bill is pragmatic as hell. There's no emotional attachment. There was a certain point where Tom was trying to get paid like Eli and Peyton during that period. I feel like Bill would have shown Tom the door. And I don't think most fans, like, I know it sounds good to say Tom took less, but in New England, Bill ain't really rolling with it. He ain't really rolling like that. He's shown many Hall of Famers the door. And I think he would have done the same to Tom. But again, the onus is on the general manager to draft
see,
well
my thing
and
is
spend
that,
well
like,
in free agency.
I'm not saying the man needs to be, you know, paid, you know, badly. But what I am saying is this, like, at the end of the day, you honestly have to know what you're worth. And, like, that, I think if Dak honestly walks into that office and feels as though he's worth 54, whatever the case may be, he's bugging because he's not. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, get your money. I mean, right now you're playing on a rookie deal. You have outplayed your rookie deal. I will admit that wholeheartedly. He has outplayed his rookie deal. You know what I'm saying? But to go in there and say, I want 54, this, that, I think, you know, as a player, you know what I'm saying, you got to have some type of common sense. Give them a realistic number that it's fair and, you know, you can live with. Like, I just, like, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not, you know, an up-and-coming Lamar Jackson. Like, that Prescott knows who he is, and he's not Patrick Mahomes. You know what I'm saying? If Patrick Mahomes walked into Andy Reid's office and was like, I want $54 million, Andy Reid wouldn't even blink. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because he's worth that.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Like realistically, I'm with you on that. Here's the other part. Ian Rappaport came out on Twitter. Y'all can look this up. And said the report that came out today was erroneous. The Cowboys didn't say that. That didn't actually happen, but the leak had the same effect as if it did happen, because now everybody's convinced that Dak's asking for 45 plus, even though we don't know that to be true. So you see what I'm saying? Like, this is what teams do in contract negotiations. They leak situations and then come back later and deny it. So now Dak looks like the greedy guy who's asking for all the money. Meanwhile, Jerry's sitting back laughing, rolling a blunt, like, yeah, I got it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Wow. And that's the crazy part about the situation where Jerry holding the power, but then it's like this, Jerry, do you want to wait till the final minute like you did with Zeke? Like, is that's the blueprint of waiting till, like, let's just say, the second week of August or the latter part of July. I want to be fair. Well, once a lot of this stuff clears up and then we have a good, you know, identity on where we are with the COVID-19 situation. But it's like, do you want to play this type of hardball with this guy? And if so, if you do end up franchising him, right, he's going to play either over the moon or he's going to play subpar and then ready to be out and go somewhere where he feels like he can make a difference. And everybody that's been leaving Dallas has been talking junk about Dallas when they leave. The only one that made their way back to trying to make their way back into the league is Dez Bryant. But you had Cole Beasley go to Buffalo and talk crap about him. You got Jason Witten, who's been a lifelong Dallas Cowboy, left and went to the Raiders. Like, that's a move for him in the latter part of his career. Like, they're telling tales of what's going on in Dallas, especially with what Nas hit on, with Jerry being the GM. Is this the pressure that needs to be on Jerry's shoulders at this point in time? Like, he really wants to control everything. He really thinks that this is going to get these guys over the hump. And it really has not worked out ever since the threesome of Troy Aikman, Emmitt, and Michael Irvin worked out ever since then. They've got their fair share of wins in the postseason, but have not gotten to the Super Bowl. And right now you have your threesome here now. Like, you have a youngster and that's coming here. You got Zeke and you got Dak. But is this, like, right off the bat, or does it take time to mend? Like, I don't know. So this is something that we do have to see as time goes on.
Okay.
And anything
Romo
else before we
do? Out with, yeah, and Jerry ran Tony Romo out of Dallas when Tony was a better quarterback than Dak was at that point in his career. Like, that's something that's not talked about, too. He found a cheaper quarterback, so he ran Dak out there, when honestly, Tony Romo at that point was way better than what Dak was. And Tony ended up retiring, and now we're seeing with that. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. He wasn't healthy at the time, but typically, your franchise quarterback, you get hurt, you're better than the next guy. They bring you back the next year. They were just fully ready to move on, as if Dak was ready for it. When we saw, like Timeless brought up earlier, Dak was so resistant to take risks that he was just doing dump offs to the point to where Dez wasn't even effective because Dak couldn't push the ball down the field early in his career.
Exactly.
So, like, I'm all with Sirius's criticism of Dak. I'm definitely not saying he's that dude.
Hey, like I said, we will see as time goes on. I really want to see which way Jerry goes with this one because it'll be interesting if he does end up giving Dak the contract that he's requesting, but I want to see how the Cowboys look in year two, year three, year four, year five. If you start to see more and more pieces leaving Dallas and they're getting no-namers from the Mountain West Conference, like then you'll understand what's going on. Even though Jerry got that dough, Jerry has that money, but it'll be interesting to see what they'll do. And I really feel like they're going to franchise him. I really feel like they're, just like Nas said, I think they'll back-to-back franchise him just to keep him quiet and see if he plays up to par or below par.
Okay. So we're cooking. It's interesting that I had one topic come out from the fridge with, some leftovers, and then spill right over into my pot and got Nas putting wooden spoons in my pot. Get the hell out of my pot. Okay. So sticking in Dallas with these Cowboys, Aldon Smith is reinstated at this point in time to come to the Dallas Cowboys after everything that happened in the Bay Area from one side of the bridge to the other, from San Francisco to Oakland, going into a federal building of an airport screaming that he has a bomb on him. He goes down to Jerry's World. While this mayhem is going on with Dak Prescott, Zeke getting his deal, so on and so forth, with a lot of youngsters coming in there. Your guys' thoughts on Aldon Smith, do you feel like he's rehabilitated? I mean, well, I want to think along the lines that he's rehabilitated. I don't want to pick on him like that. I'll leave that out. But your thoughts on Aldon Smith going to Jerry's World and trying to make this happen as he's been reinstated to be back in the NFL. Nas, I'll come to you first.
It's low risk, high reward. He's one of the best pass rushers you've ever seen as a young man, extremely troubled. May have CTE or some other issues going on with that dude. If something bad happens, they'll cut him immediately. They're not paying him much. So this is like a free scratch-off ticket. You walk in the gas station and somebody just hands you a $10 scratch-off ticket. Here you go, man. Good luck with that. So, I mean, that's what it is with Aldon Smith, man. If he's rehabilitated and he's doing better now as far as mentally-wise, then – they got a great find in him, man. But that dude needed some years off, man, because he was really, really, really out there real bad. But talented dude.
Here's your thoughts on Aldon Smith. How do you feel about him going to the wacky and whiny Jerry's World?
You know, honestly, man, I'm going to be painfully honest with you. I'm all for rehabilitation. I'm all for second and third chances and forgiveness. I do believe he, like a couple of others that we've spoken about on this network in years past, I just don't know. You know what I'm saying? My man Nas said it perfectly fine. You know, it's like a free lotto ticket. You know what I'm saying? If, you know, if you hit, you hit. If you don't, you know, you can rip it off and throw it in the trash. But you know, I'm scared, to be painfully honest with you. I'm scared. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that, you know, you want to get back in the league and you want to try to do right, Josh Gordon, and you want to do right, you know, Antonio Brown, and you want to do, you know, what you need to do, you know, Santonio Holmes and company. But at the end of the day, are you able to rid yourself of the demons and the situations that have plagued you? You know what I'm saying? Like for Aldon Smith, I mean, again, you want to get back in the league and you want to try to make good and you start seeing some money and you start seeing some things and all of a sudden, you know, you allow yourself to get back into the situations. Like I would like to know who's around him. You know, who's advising him? Who's in his corner that has the authority to tell him, yeah, bro, don't go there. Or don't do that. I'm more into that part of the rehabilitation than just, you know, giving this man a check and letting him loose back in the league and saying, good luck, pro. You know what I'm saying? Is he checking in with anybody? Is anybody mentoring him? Is he on the phone with a Tony Dungy type? Is he on the phone with somebody, you know, a high regard, a Lewis Riddick type, or a Mike Tomlin like, or somebody with that level of cachet that can speak into this young man's life and try to guide him, you know? We'll see what happens.
I don't know what it's going to be like because he's been off the field for quite some time. I'm wishing him the best. I'm hoping that he's rehabilitated. But I was so frustrated just watching him just dismantle his career from the house party to him being in that airport. And it's like the one thing that made me fear the situation was I fly. Like, I leave. I go places. It's like picture somebody walking into an airport saying they got a bomb. Like, forget just trying to be a man and be tough about it. Like, I'm worried if this dude is he on the same gate as me. Like, I don't want to be on the same gate with this dude. And if he get on the plane, it's like, are you going to do this all fight long? Like, I don't want to deal with that. But this is all of the mayhem that has to go on in Jerry's world right now. He's dealing with a disgruntled quarterback that's not being paid. He's dealing with some pieces that have left. And we're seeing that Blake Jarwin could be the guy at the tight end position as, you know, we see Jason Witten go elsewhere. You got Cole Beasley picking on these guys. It is so interesting to see what's going to happen next with this Dallas Cowboys team. This is going to be the new soap opera, Days of Our Lives, for real. And I don't know what's next for this team. But Al Don Smith, I wish you well. I'm not going to totally poo-poo the situation because you were a phenom when you were in at least San Francisco. You were doing some dirt. Things slowed down when you got into Oakland. And then everything else went haywire. But I do want to see what you do in Dallas. Okay. So it's time for me to heat this grill up somewhat, right? And then this is a little controversial, and I want to see how you guys feel about this certain situation. But the individual that I'm about to say, I feel like is a little bitter because the other individual has been doing well in their career comparison to them, I'm thinking, right? But Paul Pierce jumps out of his skin and says LeBron James is not a top five player on his list. I want to see how you guys feel about the situation and what has been said with Paul Pierce in reference to LeBron James. Do you agree or disagree? Pierce, I'll come to you first.
You know, honestly, man. I'm going to keep it a buck with you, you know what I'm saying? Like, I done took Nas's phrase. I don't even care, to be painfully honest with you. Like, Paul Pierce, you know, it's his list, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't feel as though LeBron should be on his list, you know, that's his business. I do think he's a little better. I do think he feels some type of way because, you know, he had to deal with LeBron, you know, some time when he was a member of the Boston Celtics and some other things. But, you know, it's his list. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to talk about that Horace Grant, Michael Jordan thing. We'll probably get to that later. But
Yeah.
But I don't even really care. Be paying for honesty about Paul Pierce. I never even liked him anyway.
Who you know, like Paul Pierce or LeBron?
Nah. Oh, Pierce. I don't really like Paul Pierce anyway.
Okay. Nas, your thoughts on the statement that Paul Pierce made about the top five and LeBron?
So this topic gets into the mind of Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce is a dude who wants to design criteria based on things that are closer to fitting him. So he says the reason that he made that list that he made was because those guys he listed were franchise changers who stayed in this in the team that they were on and built something there. So that immediately is his way of crossing out LeBron and also hyping himself up a little bit because he stayed in that Celtics jersey for so long. So, yeah, it's a biased nonsense list. Paul Pierce is one who will make ridiculous claims for attention. He's following the Skip Bayless model of media. So I'm kind of not surprised, but like Sirius said, I don't take him serious, but it is something to laugh at. Like, come on, Paul. Like, for real, man. Like, you really doing this based on some type of damn team loyalty and all that kind of stuff. Like, Paul, get out of here, man. You're all-time
you
great,
have...
but
wait.
Your all-time great is fringe as hell.
Do you have the five that he listed?
I want to say I know Russell was in it. I know Magic was in it. Jordan, Kobe. Who else was in that thing? Boy, I want to say he had Bird in there, but maybe I'm wrong.
Magic, Kareem, Bill Russell, Magic, and Kobe.
Okay, there we go. So no Bird.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting point. Wait, hold on. This is the interesting point, right? These names are interesting, right? And I already know how now I stand on the Kobe Brown situation, and I love that we're in the middle of the cookout in the kitchen, and it could go down right now because we got time, dude. So we got time. Believe me, I got time because, you know what I'm saying? But here goes. Look, you also got Tim Duncan. Like, Timmy up there, too. Like there's some names that you could throw in there. That's why I'm like, okay. I know Paul's doing this. Look. I know Paul is doing this to start trouble. Like, nobody was even picking on LeBron being top five. It's already bad enough that you got Bron and Mike in this conversation. And after people seen episode 1 through 10 of this Last Dance, if y'all still think LeBron up there, then bon voyage. You know what I'm saying? But in other words, you know, Kareem, which I feel like LeBron is going to end up catching his point total. Kareem's been there. Kareem has played in the league, 20 years and got 6 championships. And looking at Kareem's his resume is ridiculous. This is a post that I put up the other day. If you look at all of what Kareem accomplished, not only just in the NBA, but also in college, they made the Luau Cinder rule where people couldn't dunk because nobody could stop him from dunking. But I don't even want to talk about college. I want to push that out of the way. And all the stuff that he did accomplish while he was the captain. And that's his nickname, captain. Forget King and all that other stuff. This is the captain, like, seriously. And what he was able to do, he got 1 championship with Oscar, and he got 5 with Magic. And that's the total that Magic got, too. And it's like, the one thing I look at is like, why is Magic's name always lost in transition when you talk about top players? I don't get it. Like people love to say everything else. Yo, Magic played 11 years and was forced to retire and went to the finals 9 times out of the 11 years that he played, and he won as a rookie. You tell me a rookie that won a championship. Mind you, okay.
Hey,
Matt, Kareem was out.
List,
right, no. I'm saying how people lose Magic's name and you know, in transition of this conversation
okay,
in the top 5. It's like people don't mention Magic. They'll say everybody else, but it's like, shoot, I remember back in the 80s when I was growing up, it's like I was trying my best to do a Magic pass, like, on purpose, and I would probably throw the ball out of bounds because I'm bugging out. Like, Magic is what LeBron be trying to do. Like, these are players of yesteryear that people are losing their transition. And just like you said about, Nas said that Paul was more or less talking about, like, players that played for the team for the duration of their career. I look at Tim Duncan, and if it wasn't for Tim Duncan, would we really be talking about the Spurs, how we're like, we look at the Spurs nowadays, it's like, oh, the Spurs. Like, you hear the Spurs, you worried about the Spurs. And Tim ain't even there no more, but you knew what the Spurs were. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then they added on Mantle. Then they added on Tony Parker. Like, then the pieces came. But it was like, Tim was the constant. It's fundamental. Like, knowing what he was able to do and accomplish down there, Tim won, what, 5 championships.
Yeah, he won 5.
And he lost. Yeah, he got 5. And I don't think he lost any. I don't think he lost any time when he got to
the
finals.
No, he lost the one with Miami, the Ray Allen 3. If Ray Allen doesn't make that 3, are we talking about a 6-0 Tim Duncan?
Yeah, no. I said five. No, I said he had 5. I didn't say he had 6.
Right.
But he lost 5.
No. I said it. Right. I said if Ray Allen misses that 3, are we now talking about a 6-0 Tim Duncan? And then where are people pushing him in the GOAT list?
Exactly. Look. So Tim is in the discussion. They ain't even talking about Tim. Like, this is an interesting list right now. This is an interesting list. Look, I get it. LeBron is the player of this era. You know what I'm saying? And it's fascinating that nobody is like him. Like, he has speed, power, size. He could jump out of the gym. It's all here. And now he's developed the jump shot that he's built confidence in. And now he has trees around him. And it's unfortunate that this season was robbed from him, because the Lakers could have been one of the powerhouses coming out of the West. I think it was a Western Conference championship. I could care less on how people felt in the Eastern Conference. It was coming out of the West, period. So that's that. But it's like he needed pieces to be around him to get the job done. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. This is a very interesting conversation. I would have to lean more towards LeBron, because where he's at right now, and it doesn't really look like he's slowing down. Like, you can't tell me LeBron is slowing down right now. Like, he still has that speed, size, strength, and ability to make things happen. It's like, do you see LeBron slowing down in 2-3 years? Like, I don't think so. Like,
and the crazy thing is, Tom, like, they've been off for, since March. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't see the NBA starting back up. So they might not even get back on the floor until September, October. So that's like, 6-7 months just rest. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to be crazy.
Right. So I can't be mad. Okay, and now that I throw Nas back in here, and like I said, I got time. So looking at the five, would the debatable one be Kobe? Like, and then are you really aiming at Kobe and LeBron? It's like okay, Kobe was able to get a decent amount of points in his career. Hold on. Wait, hold on. I won't interrupt you when you speak. Why do you continue to do this to me? Why do everybody do it to me? Why? I'm just cooking here. I'm just cooking, right? So Kobe was able to put up a decent amount of points in his career. They both ended up passing Mike. Final appearances, Kobe made 7 and won 5. Like, why is he not being considered in that light? And it was like, okay, I look at Kobe's Lakers of 2009 and 2010, where he ended up getting Powell and Ron Artest. I don't like calling him Metal World Peace. I don't care if he thinks that's his name. I'm calling him Ron Artest. His mama called him Ron Artest. I'm calling him Ron Artest. But he was able to get Ron Artest. Bynum, they got in the draft, and he stayed there when Shaq left. But they were able to get pieces there in L.A., but not as big as the pieces that it took for LeBron to get down there in South Beach. You know what I'm saying? And when he didn't have those pieces, of course he was able to carry that Cavalier team that God knows where or how the GM put that together in 07. But LeBron was able to carry those guys to the finals and lost. But, if he didn't have these powerhouse teams, where would he be? And looking at his resume right now, he's 3-6. 3-6 out of a weaker Eastern Conference. But go ahead, because I want to hear where you're coming from now. So, we stopped it the last time, but now I got time for you.
All right, well, let me quote Sean Carter first. He said, "Hold that flow. He's no big and close. How I'm supposed to win when they got me battling ghosts?" Shout out to Jimmy.
That's one of my favorite freestyles.
When we're talking about LeBron.
Don't do that to me. That's one of my favorite freestyles. Don't you ever do that.
Oh, he went in on that. But think about what we're talking about, man. Think about, rest in peace to Kobe Bryant, but think about pre-Kobe's death, how we thought of him, and then post-Kobe's death, how we thought of him. All of a sudden, he started getting raised up to a level that we didn't look at him while he was alive. I love Kobe Bryant. Great player. He's Michael Jordan's son the same way LeBron is Magic Johnson's son. Great player. But LeBron is better than him, man. And I don't mean that as a slight towards Kobe. Kobe's an all-time great, one of the best to ever do it. But honestly, bro, when you're the passenger on your first 3 chips, you can't start talking about your finals record. You weren't driving. Shaq was driving. LeBron drove the car on every one of his chips. And when people say, oh, his finals record is bad, you know why? Because the East was historically bad, so he was taking bad teams that had no business in the finals historically to the finals. And because of that, he gets L's, and then people say, oh, well, he lost in the finals. When in reality, every other all-time great, when they had bad teams, they got put out early. They didn't make it to the finals, so it didn't look as bad. So LeBron is basically fighting against mythology. He'll never win the fight against Michael Jordan, who I don't think he's a better player than Michael Jordan. I don't even entertain that. But he'll never win that anyway because you're fighting against the mythology of 6-0. Now, let me throw something on y'all head then. Since we fight mythology, let's say this. LeBron James played an all-time great team who he beat being down 3-1, and then they added the second-best player in the NBA. If the Utah Jazz add Hakeem Olajuwon, you telling me Michael Jordan's beating them? You telling me he's 6-0? You see what I'm saying? Like, we deal with mythology sometimes with the NBA. I don't think we deal with reality. Because we say, oh, well, Mike got the determination to win. He just wouldn't lose. Really?
Right. Hold on. Now let me cook. Can I cook? Let me get back in front of this grill because I love the way that you just try to put that little dish together, and I'm about to squash it, right? Which I give you some credence on what Kevin Durant did. I don't think that was more or less Golden State. That was Kevin Durant ring chasing, and I still think that that's something that's on his mind, even with him going to Brooklyn. I think that he wants to go to Brooklyn where it's his team and he can try and catapult the Nets to a championship. I feel like that's hard work, even though he's an awesome player, right? But you can't forget, LeBron lost two finals with that stacked Miami team. They lost to Dallas, won the one-legged jump shot of Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, really, are you giving the Jet credit? Are you really giving Jason Kidd credit? Like, okay, I'll give you a one-legged Jason Kidd and Jason Terry walking on his way out of the league. Fine, if you want to talk about it like that while the Heat were stacked.
J.J. Barrett was dropping that theory.
Hold on. I'll let you cook all the way through your dish. Look, then you got a situation where, yeah, they got after the Spurs that first one, but then they lost to the Spurs right after the back-to-back they got from Oklahoma City and beating the Spurs the first time. Kawhi figured them out and locked that up, and that was the stack. And then you have to think about Cleveland. It's unfortunate that Kyrie got an injury in that game one up against Golden State, and they lost the series. They came back and won the next season, but then after that they lost again. There were pieces on those Cavaliers teams. It wasn't like he was going to battle with nobody. They had pieces there. So it's not like I'm giving you everything that you want to talk about, like there were teams, no business that they had to get into the Eastern Conference. They had pieces on those two teams, and that's at least four of his six losses. Four of his six losses are questionable or are in question about his legacy right now. And that would still put him at 3-4 right now if we're taking that or however you want to judge that situation, at least four of his losses.
Again, Kobe only has two as the driver, and if we doing the way back machine, that Dallas team was damn good. That's when the zone was introduced to the NBA. That's still the best NBA zone I've ever seen. And let's not discredit Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler. Those were really good players at that time in their life, and they played a really good team.
Okay. But look. Let's go name for name, though. Nah, let's be real. Go name for name. I'll let you list off Dallas and let me start listing off Miami. You tell me who you'd be more thrilled with going to battle with.
Go ahead. Like I said, that Dallas team's really good. Jason Kidd, Hall of Famer, great player on his last legs, but still had his mind. The zone allowed him to keep his legs. Remember, game one, they lost. Peja played 25-plus minutes. Great three-point shooter. Guess what? The great coach Rick Carlisle said Peja can't play in this series. Peja didn't play again. He became a role player bench guy, and they decided to play Sean Marion more. They played that zone to expert execution. Your boy Jason Terry shot well. Hey, Dallas earned that, man. I don't take any L's on that one. To me, Dallas earned that first chip. The Spurs series, Timmy was great. Tony Parker was great. The boy Kawhi defended LeBron well, and they deserve to win too. So, yeah, you take those L's. Now, let's go to Kobe's side of the ledger. They're the one team to lose to an NBA team who didn't necessarily have a frontline Hall of Famer. Now, we could say Ben Wallace is probably getting in, but that Detroit Pistons team that beat Kobe Bryant and Shaq, there's not a frontline Hall of Famer on that team. That team is an outlier. They beat those Lakers. And again,
she's
first
Hall of Famer.
Let me cook. She should be, as far as me and you feel, as far as we respect that dude, but she probably won't get in based on the criteria. You know, I'm a Sheed fan. I love that dude, so I hope he does.
I'm a diehard.
He probably won't. Like, let's be honest. Sheed probably won't. Like, that ain't a guaranteed thing. First three trips of Kobe's, he's in the passenger side of the car. Like, you got to say that. Shaq was dominant
but
in that period and led them
can
to
you
those chips.
Can you fault him?
Kobe was driving
with
Paul Gasol. He won two, and he won one in the game seven where he was 6-25. Am I lying?
No, you're not. You're not. No, you're not lying. I didn't say you were. I didn't say you were. But you can't fault Kobe for the first three. He got drafted or traded there from Charlotte. Like, and he had to wait his time because Eddie, look, at that point in time, from 96 to 98 right there, I was in love with Eddie Jones right there. Because Eddie was going off. Then they gave Kobe some shine. Kobe came off that bench. They told Eddie he could go to Charlotte. They sent him, and then it's like, okay, well, now the new hysteria of Kobe Bryant is around. Like, he was young. He was, what, 21 right there. You can't totally fault Kobe right there. Like, come on.
They weren't championship contenders then. They were championship contenders when he was a starter. He was fully ingrained in the lineup. That's much later when they started winning chips. And it was on the back of Shaquille O'Neal. Like, that's all I'm saying.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You're gonna end up giving Shaq credit because Shaq was the one that been to the finals before. Kobe never been there. And plus, they just got Phil. Phil just came around. Phil just came from Chicago. You seen The Last Dance where Krause and them ain't want them back? Phil just came. Hello, everything instantly turned around. He had a new and improved Mike. Just think, he's emulating Mike. That's part two of Mike.
Okay, in what way is Kobe better? When we go to the stats, field goal percentage, no. Passer, no. Rebounder, no. Defender, no. In what way is Kobe better? We like Kobe because of his mentality and who he is and what he represents as far as being a man, standing up for everything, as far as like, yo, ain't backing down from nothing. Like, Kobe's greatest thing is he had no fear of failure. 15-year-old that shot those air balls in Utah to, you know, game six, whatever, in the finals tight, never scared to take the shot, never scared to take the blame, everything else. That's why we respect and love Kobe, man. Like, that dude is one of a kind. He may have been somebody who imitated Jordan as far as play style, but that was because that was the best. That was the gold standard. So Kobe was going to try to achieve that. But as far as him as a player, he's a plus 43% below shooter lifetime. Like, that matters. Like, let's keep it a buck. When he started getting older and they wanted free agents to come out to play with him in L.A., there were no takers. Let's keep it a buck.
Yeah, but he's a shooter. LeBron's not shooting. LeBron didn't get confidence into that jumper until 2020. Like, think about that. LeBron was passing on those opportunities to try to knock down the shot. LeBron wasn't taking that shot. LeBron is a passer. You even said that's Magic Jr. Even though Magic was willing to take that shot, like the style that he took in Boston. Like, LeBron ain't so going to take that shot till, what was that, the Ray Allen shot. When Ray Allen hit that shot, and it was like he took the headband off, and like, they're going to take me down swinging. Like, that was LeBron. Like, LeBron wasn't always the one willing to try to be the one with the killer mentality. These are bosses. These are guys that want the ball. LeBron didn't want the ball at the end of the game. Think about that, what happened in Golden State. You're talking about the Golden State.
And when we go to the tape, and when we go to the tape and Basketball Reference, we see that LeBron's made more game-winning shots than Kobe, hit more shots in the clutch than Kobe. But the mythology tells us Kobe always hits game-winning shots because we forget the misses. This is what I'm saying, man. Mythology works in sports, bro. We draw a certain story for a person, and then despite the facts, we decide that story is what that person is. And
yeah,
look,
but
I love Kobe Bryant.
I like the fact that people throw that out there, that LeBron has more game winners, but that goes to show you how close these games are with LeBron. A lot of these guys getting smoked by the Bulls. These guys are getting smoked by the Lakers. Like, these guys aren't trying to be in harm's way. These guys are killers. These guys are trying to get you out of the way by the third quarter. Like, I love that stat that people say LeBron's taking more game winners. This dude took a running bench shot fading left toward the corner three-point line against the Bulls, or was it the Raptors? Like, is that a legit shot that he would do in the game? Like, that was a prayer. Even the shot that he hit up against
Orlando the 3-point shot. He hit that and swung his arms like, please fall, and it fell. He almost jumped out of his skin because that was the first one of the first game winners that he hit. But come on, man. LeBron, stop that. Stop that. Like, not in comparison to what Kobe did on the floor. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. Again, that's mythology stuff, man. The stats don't say what you say to be true, man. That's what you want to be true, to say that he played more close games. That's just not true, man. I'm sorry. Kobe passed away, so we got a certain reverence for that dude. But when it comes down to it, when we're really putting that list together, I cannot put that dude ahead of LeBron James, man. I just can't.
We still gonna fight. Look, I got 9 minutes left with y'all, man. Damn, I thought I had time with you. I had an interesting conversation outside of the kitchen, and I know this is just filler, but I did want to get to it. Best football announcers, I wanted to see how you guys felt about this, right? I'm already going to give – I don't want to persuade you guys, but I'm going to say it. Out of the top three that I came up with, out of the five that were mentioned, these were the top three that I thought. John Madden, Keith Jackson, and Pat Summerall. Who was the best out of the three? Serious, I'll come to you. I haven't heard from you. So your thoughts out of the three names, I guess the golden voice of football and from what we've heard.
You know what? Honestly, man, I'm going to go with Madden for me. I think when we start to talk about, you know, this whatever the case may be, people like different stuff. You know what I'm saying? People like different flavors. Like, I got friends of mine who actually think, you know, Collinsworth is good. You know, I mean, different strokes, different folks. You know what I'm
Hell no.
I think for me, it's going to be mad. But, yeah, I run with a crazy group of people, man.
Whoever said Collinsworth, yo, go out for a drink and I ain't going to even say it, man. I was going to say Bill Cosby, but forget it. Like, that might be distasteful. Lord forgive me. But look, don't do it. Lord forgive me. But, okay, Nas, your thoughts on the three, or if you have another name to throw in there, and I didn't want to limit Sirius either. If you had another name that you wanted to throw in the pot, you could, but. Nas, your thoughts on the three that I mentioned, or if you have another name outside of Summerall, Madden, or Keith Jackson?
Yeah, well, I'm with Sirius on John Madden. John Madden taught football fans basics that they didn't know. Like, growing up, Madden was kind of what kind of put us on to what's going on the field. Now, it sounds simple now, but think about it. The new version of Madden is Tony Romo. Tony Romo is teaching us things now. He's probably the best at it. He's getting paid for, you know, his expertise, and he's really good at it. But I got a certain soft spot for Pat Summerall. The voice, the way that he kind of set the stage for everything, and I guess all the memories I got that's kind of tied to his voice to where I really rock with the dude. So I got to put him at number two. But you got to get that thing to John Madden, man. Like, you know, people was watching football not knowing what the hell they were seeing. John Madden was breaking it down back in the day.
Okay, so I'm against both of you and totally against you, Nas, even though I love the breakdown. So, number one, Pat Summerall, because to me, I felt like he was the velvet rope of announcing. Him and John Madden, that was Mike and Pippen, you know what I'm saying? And it was like he was the color commentator. He could do no wrong as long as he was alongside of John Madden. And it was, and me and my bias, it was like every time they talked about the Lions on TV and Barry was going crazy, John Madden would go crazy, but Summerall going even crazier. So it's like I loved it, you know what I'm saying? And then Keith Jackson, I'm going to say two words that will never get out of my head as long as I think about the sport, football. Whoa, Nelly. Like if you were here, Keith Jackson say them two words, I'm getting goosebumps right now. I'm getting pumped, and football ain't even in season. Like, because I know what Keith Jackson brought to, you know, ABC and things of that nature and rest his soul, you know what I'm saying? And then I put John Madden at least third in that because John Madden was the fun guy. Like, we loved John because he was the big guy. And everybody knew that he was a coach, so on and so forth. And he had the game at that. So we all loved John at one point or another. But it was like, that was my three. I had Summerall, Jackson, and Madden, the way that I had three. And this was a very interesting debate as we went at it, because it was a toss-up, actually, between Keith Jackson and Summerall. But few actually said Madden. You guys both said Madden. It was a very interesting conversation. I don't know, anything that you guys are looking to discuss on those three, Ellie?
Yeah, man, the Summerall, get a cup of that Grey Goose in the booth, get loose, and he'll let that boy go, bro. Like, if you born with a voice like that, bro, you should be on broadcast. That boy has one of the coldest voices ever. It just is what it is.
Right. I love Summerall bad. It's like, man, like, why did he get sick? Like get that boy some NyQuil or some Robitussin, man, something. He needs something, man. Don't let that go, man. And now John ain't even talking. I know that took John out of the booth too, man, watching Pat go and having him do it differently, man, and just missing all three of them. All three of them not in the booth no more and having to deal with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. Serious, whoever it is, you point them out. Point them out to me. Point them out to me, whoever said Chris Collinsworth. I feel some type of way. Okay. I am at the end of the show. I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. If you ever do that to me again, Nas, with that Grammy Family Freestyle, we are fighting. I'm coming to Georgia immediately. Look, I don't care what's going on. I'm out there.
He was in his bag, though.
So don't ever throw Jay at me like that. I'm a rock fan by far. You can never, ever do that again. And that probably is one of his best freestyles. I can't even say that is his because Jay got a lot of them. But that one right there, man, he was screaming for 4 minutes long. Don't do that. Don't do that again. Don't you ever do that again. All right. I don't even know who to go first. I'm so mad that he did that to me. You know what, Nas, you're going first. Give me your plug, close out, shout out, as we get ready to shut the lid here at the cookout.
Yeah, man. Don't let these people play with your expectations. Hopefully we get some sports. I'm betting on Korean baseball tonight, just to let y'all know how seriously deprived we are of sports. They're promising us the NBA is going to come back. I don't know, bro. You telling me you're going to put everybody in a bubble and all the NBA players are just going to stay there? Nobody's going to creep out, meet an IG model. Nobody's going to creep out and get some substances that they like. Like, bro, this just don't sound likely. If there's a bad test, what you do? Isolate that person and keep it moving? Okay, what if the bad test is Giannis? You keep the playoff series going? Like, I don't know, man. So I'm just having a hard time believing what they're telling me, dude. Hopefully we get it, but I doubt it.
Let alone you say that. Let me spice that dish up. They want to put him in a bubble in Vegas? Are you kidding? Like, oh, you telling me I can't go outside in Vegas? Listen, serious, no. Every December, I am in one city and one city only. There is no way you're telling me I can't go outside in Vegas. Like, you have lost your rabbit ass mind. There's no way in hell. Like, I'm speaking out. I don't know about y'all. I expect to be, what, LeBron, Russ, all of them, they running. I don't know. I'm not just cooking today. Serious, give me your blog, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as well.
And it's such a pleasure to be here with you guys, you know, saying kicking off my Friday morning with you, Matt, and it's been good to, you know, sit back and just really just talk about some things. You know, definitely, man, pleasure to be here. Yo, definitely check us out. We'll be back in the building. Take a look at your internet. Post it on Facebook. This, that, and the third, man. Also, get at your boy on Facebook, man. I got some stuff coming out probably sometime late next week about some NFL things. I'm kind of working with somebody out here. They're going to get me some stuff together. We're going to do something, whatever. So definitely be abreast of that. Man, it's your boy, Serious, man. I'm done. Y'all be easy.
All right, definitely, man. I don't even know which way to go with this one, man. I'm feeling some type of way because I just got word earlier today that they're trying to get the NBA, at least these guys back together, practicing by June 1st. So I want to see how that weighs out. If they could get everybody back by June 1st, that'll be very interesting to see how that works out. definitely an interesting conversation with the spill off from Brian Hughes. Brian, thank you for throwing that one in the fridge for me so I could cook this one back up. I wish I'd have had these brothers up in the West Coast, but they unfortunately had family duties to deal with. I need some tips on that Korean baseball. I need to figure out what's going on because I might start to put some numbers up with you too, Nash. I'm a Vegas kid at that note. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Yeah. Classic hip-hop shit. Dr. D-R-E. Rosé and Jake. Let's get them. We started out mopping floors. And now we front row with the awards. Number one for the last 20 years. If you real, motherfucker, scream cheers. Motherfucker, scream cheers. Yeah. And it is what it is.